Hello and welcome to Pets Plus Us, a weekly program of information and stories about the companions in our lives, our pets. I'm Mary DeFranco, your host for Pets Plus Us. Coming up this half hour from the Cornell University College of Veterinary Medicine's Spring 2017 edition of Snoops, we'll learn about the important work done at Cornell, including research at the Cornell Equine Park, canine dentistry, and cancer. Lauren Calhoun Roberts writes about the helpful horses at the Cornell Equine Park. At first glance, it looks like any large horse farm. Expansive pastures, a stately barn, a white farmhouse, yet the Cornell Equine Park is much more than a pretty place. This hidden gem of the college has helped develop some of the most clinically useful drugs on the market, produced world-class sports horses, served as a federal quarantine facility, and enabled life-enhancing discoveries, and trained future and current top clinicians and researchers. The Equine Park truly represents a combination of teaching, research, and service that is quite unique, says Park Facility Director Dr. Lisa Fortier. It really sets our institution apart as a veterinary college. From cow barn to quarantine facility. The park started in 1974 as a research facility for equine nutrition, drug testing, reproduction, and infectious disease. Originally a dairy farm, the main barn required significant remodeling to make it suitable for horses. Dr. Jack Lowe, Professor Emeritus of Large Animal Surgery and former director of the park, recalls personally jackhammering the cement milking stanchions to get the facility ready, along with a team of willing students and employees. Their first herd of horses came from a wealthy donor, Dwight Winkleman of Skinny Atlas, New York. He gave us a good stallion and 20 mares, says Lowe, and it grew from there. People continued to donate their horses. This made the park a great place for equine research and a great place for teaching, too. Lowe also arranged for the park to be a quarantine facility for contagious equine metritis, or CEM, a serious, highly transmissible venereal disease in horses. For decades, thanks in part to its closeness to the Animal Health Diagnostic Center, Cornell had the only equine metritis quarantine facility in the Northeast. All horses of breeding age entering the country from Europe and Japan through this region had to first stay at the park for screening. In its heyday, the CEM facility saw 2,000 mares and 150 stallions. Revolutionary research. Park-based discoveries have fundamentally changed equine health and husbandry. Groundbreaking nutritional research conducted by Lowe, Dr. Harold F. Hintz, Professor of Animal Science, and Dr. Herbert Shriver, Professor of Veterinary Nutrition, resulted in equine nutritional requirements now used by the USDA and vast improvements in equine health. In the past, we considered a 20-year-old horse as really old, says Fortier. Now we consider 35 years to be old. And the reason for that primarily is greater understanding of equine nutrition, understanding that was primarily developed here at the park. The park was also the home to the development of all new diagnostics for equine post-race drug testing in New York State and was the site of testing some of the most commonplace equine drugs in the market today, including the anti-inflammatory drug Flunixin and the sedative analgesics xylazine and detomidine. After testing detomidine at the park, I was sure every equine practitioner would have this drug in their grip, says Lowe. Beyond foundational drug discoveries, the park hosted the research of Dr. Catherine Haute, James Law Professor of Behavior Medicine Emeritus, which outlined key aspects of horse behavior, including mare-foal relationships, stallion behavior, and best practices in feeding and equine welfare. Dr. Soon Hong Cheong, Assistant Professor of Therigenology, currently studies horse reproduction at the park. He's perfecting the use of oxytocin to advance labor in park mares that are ready to foal, thus ensuring students and residents are present to observe foaling and learn how to assist if necessary. The theriogenology group has also been working on evaluating drugs for delaying ovulation without producing fertility, a potentially useful tool for the horse breeding industry. Horses are not the only species that benefit from park research. Some findings have applications in human medicine as well. Fortier has conducted her innovative work on regenerative medicine in the musculoskeletal disease, including work on mesenchymal stem cells for treatment of inflammatory diseases and bone marrow concentrate for cartilage repair. We at the college have really led the way in a lot of the regenerative medicines that are applied to humans and animals, including horses and dogs, through work that we've done at the park, she says. Fortier notes that all the research conducted at the park is non-invasive. Sometimes owners who are considering donating their horse to the park are worried about what the term research implies, says Fortier. It's nothing more invasive than blood draws, she says. The horse's health is never put in jeopardy. Horses teaching humans. While the park is undoubtedly a home for groundbreaking research, there's another mission that takes top billing, training the next generation of equine experts. The whole purpose of having these horses ultimately is for teaching, says Chung. Veterinary students do not palpate any of the client-owned horses that routinely stay at the park due to the liability of potentially causing rectal tears. Thus, park-owned animals are necessary. Our herd mostly comes from donations, says Alexa Fland, animal technician at the park. People will donate a beloved horse that, because of an injury, they can no longer ride. One horse has a bad spine. He can't be ridden, but for a teaching horse, he's wonderful. Other horses may have a bad neck or knee, and each become a useful teaching tool for students who need to learn to examine and diagnose equine patients. The availability of these Cornell-owned horses is really advantageous, says Chiang. It creates an invaluable learning experience for our students. He explained that students get to practice ultrasounds, inseminations, palpations, and other key clinical skills for equine medicine. It's not just the horses themselves that are teaching tools. The entire faculty is a learning lab. The entire facility is a learning lab, I should say. At other schools, you may have a small barn for horses, notes former barn manager Carol Collier, but the equine park is a real operating farm. Students see the same situations that you would working as an equine practitioner. It's very much an on-the-farm experience. Indeed, the entire package of 165 acres of green pastures, 62-stall main barn, stallion and broodmare barns, all less than 2 miles away from the college, is an unusual resource for a veterinary school. It's a huge, huge asset, Collier adds. Students are learning a well-rounded aspect of horse care management and veterinary care all rolled into one. Not only that, students can immerse themselves fully into the world of working horse farm by boarding at the on-site farmhouse at the park. Students will take shifts on foal watch during the spring and early winter, muck stalls, turn out and feed horses. Lauren Jacobs, a second-year veterinary student, is a park farmhouse resident and enjoys the farm life. It's peaceful compared to the bustle of campus. I also enjoy having an outlet to interact with animals whenever I need a study break, she says. She's also appreciated the chance to bond with park horses, including Strauss, one of the park foals born last year. He was a big boy, but very friendly, like his mellow-tempered mother, recalls Jacobs. This fall, I was bringing the horses in during afternoon chores and called to Strauss, and he actually came when called. I've been delighted with the chance to work with such pleasant horses and hope to continue to do this. Learning with a purpose. Beyond the basics, the Equine Park is a perfect learning lab for theriogenology. Students have access to the entire reproduction cycle. At other schools, students might get to see just one phase of the breeding cycle, says Fortier. At Cornell, students can follow a horse through breeding, pregnancy, foaling, and post-pregnancy breeding. And while the purpose of the breeding program is first and foremost educational, it developed a reputation for producing high-quality warm-blood horses under barn manager Collier's management in the late 1980s. That reputation has become something of a mission at the park since then. It's a philosophy of this place. If we're going to produce foals, they're going to be high quality, says Fortier. We want to give these horses a chance at a useful life, adds Chiang. Today, authorities from different warm blood breed associations come to the park each year to evaluate the latest crop of foals for registration and breed requirements. In spring 2016, all park-born and bred foals evaluated by the Oldenburg Breeders Association were given a premier rating, and two of the foals received a foal of distinction grade, high marks indicating a truly promising group of youngsters. Our foals do tend to get high marks, says Flan, but this year in particular, we saw a really good crop of babies. The missions and focus of the Cornell Equine Park have changed over its 30-plus year existence, and it's likely that they will continue to change as priorities at the college, state, and country shift over time. However, there is one element that will undoubtedly remain a constant in the future, as it has in the past. The park horses will continue their role as teaching animals. The horses are really the teachers here, so much more so than the people, says Fortier. Everything that they do at the park fulfills a teaching mission. They help train DVM students, no matter which brand of veterinary medicine they decide to pursue. Lowe agrees, who, after founding the park and seeing it grow and change through the years, believes its horses will remain a beloved fixture at Cornell. The horses are irreplaceable resource and a strength, he says, no matter whom you ask. In the Snoop's specialty spotlight, Lauren Calhoun Roberts tells us about dentistry and oral surgery service at Cornell. A decade ago, pet dental care didn't go much farther than a quick scale and polish followed by tossing Fido the occasional dental chew bone. Beyond that, the dental and oral disease was left mostly untreated in our animal companions. Times have changed. Spending on pet dental conditions has risen by over 55% in recent years, signifying a new awareness and demand for pet dental care. The Cornell University Hospital for Animals, or CUHA, heads this rapidly growing field as one of only five well-established academic programs in the world to offer dentistry and oral surgery training under board-certified experts. Their expertise is in high demand. The service is booked up 2 months in advance. Continuing education courses sell out almost instantly, and DVM students are lining up for a spot on the service's clinical rotation and elective course. It's only until recently that veterinarians have realized how necessary the service is, says Assistant Clinical Professor Nadine Fiani. And now we're seeing huge demand from both them and our clients. In demand, Fiani and Dr. Santiago Peralta lead the team in the small animal hospital, along with resident Dr. Kevin K. Ng and veterinary technicians Kaylee Anderson and Bethany Wright. Dr. Edward Early oversees dentistry and oral surgery for the large animal patients. 5 years ago, it was two of us, a tech and a clinician, says Peralta. The administration saw the demand for more dentistry and oral surgery expertise and enabled the service to expand to its current size, which with plans to add another full-time resident soon. That has allowed us to expand our caseload, which has grown by 118%. That growth reflects the increasing awareness that dental and oral care is a key part of animal care. More and more referring veterinarians are realizing how necessary this service is, says Peralta. Client education has also driven the demand. Pet owners start to see that their pet might not be getting the same level of dental and oral care they are, and that pushes the need in the veterinary industry. Beyond brushing teeth. While owners want more dental care for their pets, they might not realize the full extent of services capabilities. People tend to think that we clean teeth all day, says Vianney. That's not really what we do. We screen for and comprehensively treat dental diseases when detected. Additionally, the team handles any trauma injury to the head, as well as any cancer of the oral cavity, conducting surgeries when needed. They also routinely adjust bite alignment, perform root canal treatments, treat periodontal disease, and repair cleft palates or other maxillofacial malformations. In fact, the Cornell service has become world-renowned for their work in cleft palate repair. We probably operate on more cleft palates than any other medical team in the world, says Fiani. The repairs require sophisticated surgery to close the tissue of the palate on patients that can weigh less than half a pound. These repairs save animals from an early death due to pneumonia and restore function and quality of life. Like all of the services' clinical care, the mouth is the location of the work, but everything we do has a systemic bearing, Fiani says. Sophisticated service. Inside the dentistry and oral surgery services clinical suite, the upper cabinets are lined with skulls of various species, many of which were 3D printed by colleague Dr. Daniel Fletcher, Associate Professor of Emergency and Critical Care. These skulls are used for planning and analysis for oral surgeries, along with the double monitors that often display a detailed 3D scan of the patient's skull. Surgeries are sometimes performed on very diminutive patients with even smaller mouths. That's when the service's state-of-the-art microscope comes in handy, allowing the clinician a magnified view of tiny oral structures. This device, along with most of the equipment in the suite, are donations from generous clients. The level of sophistication here is comparable to human counterparts, says Peralta. A lot of what we do is taken from human medicine, but not everything gets translated the same way. He explains that for animal patients, all recommendations are based on function, since appearance is not a concern. Function, of course, is paramount, and this team is a world leader in restoring animals with severe oral issues to normal, healthy lives. Thought leaders. As their caseload and experience has grown, so has demand for the team's expertise. The need for this capability is huge, but there is a void in education, says Peralta. Luckily, Cornell DVM students can rotate through the dentistry and oral surgery service, where they're given lots of hands-on training. Our students get to perform full mouth intraoral radiographs, periodontal probing, ultrasonic scaling, and surgical tooth extractions. The students are heavily involved in interpreting the diagnostics and clinical decision-making, says Fiani, noting that each tooth represents a separate clinical determination. I like to say that they have to make at least 42 decisions for a dog, or at least 30 decisions for a cat. This level of clinical involvement and training has clear professional rewards for Cornell trainees. Once one of our DVM students has rotated through our service, Their level of knowledge and skill is way above the level of general practitioners in the country, just through some lectures and a couple of weeks on rotation. That's how big the void is, and general practitioners realize this. As Peralta and Fiani have trained more and more recent generations of veterinarians, many have stayed in the area and practiced the basic dentistry skills and knowledge they learned at Cornell, while referring more complicated cases back to their alma mater, this deepening the CUHA team's knowledge of complex dental and oral disorders. Additionally, in an effort to meet the growing demand for training among veterinarians, the Cornell team organized a three-day continuing education course on basic dentistry, which sold out immediately. Additionally, Fiani helped organize a first-of-its-kind conference called Craniomaxillofacial Disorders and Solutions in Man and Mammals, where Peralta presented his research on cleft lip and palate in dogs. This initiative and the extensive collaborative work was performed between UC Davis, UCLA, and Cornell. Fiani explains, "The meeting was very successful, and we had attendees from a broad spectrum of disciplines related to the craniomaxillofacial field, such as veterinary and human clinicians, researchers, engineers, and cancer biologists. We also had participants and speakers from the FDA and industry. Research and outreach. Thanks to the number of cleft palate repairs the group sees, they've been actively collecting scientific data regarding morphological aspects of the condition and the surgical outcome of the repair. Their other research projects include a collaboration with Dr. Angela McCleary Wheeler, Assistant Professor of Oncology, to look at molecular mechanisms involved in a common and devastating oral tumor in dogs. Another study examines the role of bacteria in development of periodontitis in dogs and cats. The group also takes their expertise beyond borders when they can. Recently, the group was part of a multidisciplinary team of CUHA clinicians, including Dr. George Coleus, J. Hyman Professor of Wildlife Medicine Emeritus, and anesthesiologist Dr. Jordan Besch, who traveled to Belize to treat the largest population of rescued captive jaguars. Funded by the Wiederhold Foundation, the trip enabled Peralta and Fiani to treat jaguars, many of which have maxillofacial injuries from the event of their capture, like traps, or dental disease. The prevalence of disease in the oral cavity is high for these animals, says Peralta. They have a lot of problems we need to treat. Treating endangered captive animals is crucial for individual animal welfare reasons, but also for conservational purposes. And a fast-moving field. If the past few years are any indication, the dentistry and oral surgery service is bound to expand, both in caseload and in knowledge. I feel like the field has moved dramatically since I started in 2008, says Fiani. Even over that relatively short period of time, the overall understanding has grown exponentially. In the near future, the service will hold more conferences, trainings, and other educational outreach to help other practitioners adopt dentistry and oral surgery skills in their practices. The service will expand to accept more students for their rotation and will continue their cutting-edge research and clinical care in the field. It's been very exciting to personally witness the growth of this important and fascinating field, says Fiani. We plan to continue to sharpen our clinical expertise while expanding our research and educational outreach so that more animals will have the dental and oral care they deserve. And finally, canines on the cutting edge of research. Also written by Lauren Roberts. Canines on the cutting edge of cancer research. We already know that dogs benefit humans. At Cornell, our canine companions' impact will be going even further. Human oncologist Dr. Christy Richards and veterinary oncologist Dr. Angela McCleary Wheeler and Dr. Kelly Hume are recruiting for a canine study that represents the first step in developing novel therapies to treat both canine and human lymphoma patients. The study focuses on the development of immunotherapy on a new and promising approach to treating cancer that co-opts the body's own immune system to attack malignant cells. A specific example of this type of immunotherapy is the PD-1/PD-L1 system, known as a checkpoint inhibitor approach. Therapeutic antibodies block the protein receptor interaction between immune cells and cancer cells, removing a natural safety break so that immune cells will then attack rather than ignore the offending cancer cell. There have been somewhat dramatic responses with these kinds of therapies, says Richard. The problem is that in most cancer types, they work less than 20% of the time. We want to figure out why it only works for a minority of patients. Their goal in partnership with Roswell Park Cancer Institute in Buffalo, New York, will be to first characterize all the mutations within dogs' lymphoma cells to see which ones result in protein changes. Patients with more of these protein changes are thought to respond better to PD-1, PD-L1 therapies. Once these protein changes are identified, the team will work to isolate and then genetically recreate T cells that recognize these offending proteins and attack the cancer cells within the patient. The ultimate goal of the research project is to develop a high-impact translational project that combines our expertise with the Roswell Park Cancer Institute. Our research will provide a deep, comprehensive understanding of mutational load and immune response in canine B-cell lymphoma. This will enable immediate development of cancer-specific novel T-cell-based therapy that may work synergistically with PD-1, PD-L1 checkpoint inhibition to improve response rates and survival times. And that will do it for this week. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. I hope you enjoyed the program. Please join me next time. And don't forget, please spay and neuter your pets. It's healthy for them and the environment. Pets Plus Us is a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. If you'd like more information about this program or to hear this program again, visit our website at wxxi.org/reachout. I'd also like to invite you to share your pet story with us by writing to us at reachout@wxxi.org.